The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me is certified financial planner Kim Wirtz. And today we are talking about women and finance, crafting a meaningful legacy. I'm so excited you're here. Kim has come all the way from Cleveland to do the show with us. And Kim and I have never been able to really have a conversation like this before. We've threatened to do it in years past on the convention side of things. And it's nice to be able to sit down and have a conversation. The old girls rule, boys drool conversation. Sorry, guys. There is a little bit of an emphasis on the women today and how things have changed for women in finance. And that's kind of why I wanted Kim and I to have this conversation together. So as I said, you know, for financial planning, from a financial planning perspective, women have evolved remarkably over decades, reflecting the social, the economical, and the technological shifts, especially. And we've got some of the most impactful changes. And I can certainly go down the bullet point list, and maybe we can just have a conversation about some of these things and get your kind of pick your brain on these things. You've been in the business, what, 20 years?
20 years.
So you're a certified financial planner for 20 years and is very proficient at helping people understand what they need to do to have a successful plan to retirement. Where I come from... there was complete illiteracy. There was no discussion about how to save, how to manage a checkbook. I've talked about this before on the show. I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but I do come from a generation of women where there are actually quite a few in my circle. We have these conversations. Nobody talked about, you know, income, what we made, what the salary was in the household. In fact, I remember specifically asking one time, and I was very radically scolded for asking and told it was none of my damn business.
Those were things that you definitely did not discuss back then.
Yeah.
And women had our own particular roles, even in our generation, not just our own parents' generation, but taking care of finances definitely was not one of those roles. We tended
but
to
it's,
be.
But the, it, it's weird because, like, I remember my mother-in-law and my mother both were the ones that handled the books. They managed the money. My mother-in-law would sit at the table probably once a week, if not, I may have seen her a couple of times a week. She had a spreadsheet. And she would sit and work on this spreadsheet while she was watching soap operas.
Love it.
You know, a mental genius, you know, navigating, you know, where the money was going to go for five boys. You know, in a household with five sons. My mom did the same thing on the opposite. I mean, waitress had to count her coins, her tips, money to know how, you know, she was going to pay the rent, pay the house payment. She had three children to support. There was no alimony or child support back in that day. I'm aging myself. But she worked very, very hard to make very little money, but she handled all the finances. And yet we still didn't, she had three daughters and she never talked to us about that. She never explained how hard it was or how to prioritize and create a cash flow system or create a budget. None of that. And there were so many women that I know of that actually run the money. And yet we don't know, you know, we really don't know what we're doing. We're kind of like flying by the seat of our pants based on our background. You have to hit the wall about 500 times before you figure it out, I think, unless you're somebody like you with the education.
So why do you think that is? Why did she teach the males in your family?
We were all girls. We were an all-girl household. She was, I think, from her perspective, this was just my little nucleus. She was so stressed that there wasn't time to have that conversation. She just had to do it. And talking about it probably either embarrassed her or made her depressed, perhaps.
Like you said, that was something that we really didn't talk about. Our parents certainly didn't talk about finances mm-hmm. with their kids. That was just kind of a taboo subject. So
yeah.
I guess I can understand, but it seems to me as a woman, if you're handling that, you already know that it's been tough out there for you, that you would want to share the mm-hmm. benefit of that education and what you had learned yeah. with your daughters.
Yeah, didn't happen.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. So as we kind of look ahead, I mean, women today are really doing a great job of becoming educated, becoming providers. Some are sole providers. The traditional roles have sort of shifted, I think, in the household in some cases. So let's talk about some of the key differences, I guess, for women compared to men when planning for retirement. I think that's probably the first thing. Longevity, you know, women live longer, right?
We tend to outlive our men. Doesn't always happen that way, but usually we will live several years longer than our spouses, and we tend to marry older spouses, or at least our generation did. So there's going to be some time spent alone, whether you're married or whether you're not. It seems that all of us will be on our own, single at some point.
And those that are single have to consider what, as far as longevity is concerned, when you're flying solo, whether you're younger or older. Let's kind of give a petri dish of what that looks like financially.
Well, financially, for just women, we do live longer, so we have to plan for our money to last longer in retirement. If we're single, maybe we don't have kids. Maybe we don't have somebody who can take care of us in our old age. If we don't have a spouse or we don't have any family, that's a real big issue. Who's going to make health care decisions for us if we can't make those decisions on our own? Who's going to help us manage our money and pay our bills if we're in a nursing home and we can't do that any longer and we don't have kids? So those are some real issues that we do have to face and have to think about, anybody who's single, not just women.
You think estate planning is sort of the first stepping stone?
I think estate planning is very instrumental piece in all financial plans, for sure, regardless of your age. As soon as you're the age of majority, you need to start thinking about having an estate plan in place, which I know is kind of hard for people to think about when they're 18 years old. But
well, the marketing screams investments, investments, investments. And so I noticed in some of these younger people that are coming, you know, through the door, investments are what's on the radar. Social media, of course, it's splattered everywhere that investing, you know, your portfolio is the end all be all. But you think the estate planning is really the neck that turns the head?
I always think that estate planning is way more important in terms of somebody's financial plan. It can unravel your plan quickly. You can spend all your time, accumulating money, and if you don't leave it properly, title it properly, plan for it properly, it can go to lawyers and taxes, and then all your hard work just kind of doesn't get to your heirs where you really want it to go. The healthcare piece, I think, is really important. You know, we all think we're going to live forever, but life comes at you fast, and if something does happen and all of a sudden you're in a coma and you can't make those decisions, you want to know that you've named somebody that will make the decisions in your best interest,
mm-hmm.
you know, not just pull the plug because they don't like you. So like an ex-spouse, right? You don't want them.
Yeah.
Or if you have named them, you probably want to update your paperwork. But I think that's really, really important piece in making sure that what you are working hard for gets to where it needs to go. And it's not just the healthcare piece, but I mentioned proper asset titling, you know, making sure that you have a beneficiary named on all of your stuff. And that even goes to, again, if we're single and we're older, we have a bank account, maybe we don't just want to name a beneficiary. Maybe we need to add somebody to that bank account while we're alive to help pay those bills. Or that comes back to the power of attorney. You can also do so. There is a lot of estate planning in all aspects, I think, of financial
planning.
That
is a whole universe that I knew really nothing about, among other things, until I started working here. Can you give an example of a situation where somebody has a large bag of money saved and they think, oh, I'm good. I've got a big portfolio. I don't need a will. I don't need a power of attorney. I'm good.
Can I give an example?
Kind of, you know,
well, sure.
Blow up.
I mean, if it's just you and you don't have a will and you die, it doesn't really affect you. You're dead. But it's going to affect wherever you wanted that money to go, because somebody else is now going to make that decision. And it's probably going to be a judge, and they might leave it to your immediate family. And maybe you hated Cousin Joe and you didn't want him to get a penny.
Yeah.
And now he's going to get, you know, a quarter of your estate. So putting your wishes down in writing, I think, is very important to make sure that things get to where they want to go. Dying intestate, dying without a will, again, doesn't leave issues for you, but it leaves a lot of a mess to untangle for potential heirs and people that you, like I say, you worked hard for that money. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to make sure my money gets to my beneficiaries and not to attorneys and, mm-hmm. you know, court costs and whatnot. And then that's also very public, you know, so anybody can find out what you had and who got it and how much and whatnot. So mm-hmm. I don't care for people to necessarily need to know that information either.
And we're not attorneys, but we often work with the attorneys who help set up these plans. So that's something that you would suggest, I would assume, for somebody to seek the help of an attorney for this.
Absolutely.
Because I know there's a lot of, like, legal Zoom, you know, opportunity to do things online. I'm not an advocate of that. Personally, for my family, I would rather pay an attorney to do it right.
There's a lot of, not a lot. There's a statutory form for power of attorney for healthcare in the state of Ohio. I think there is now a statutory form for the durable power of attorney for finances as well. But talking to an attorney is invaluable, because they will then get a picture of your entire financial plan, your mm-hmm. entire estate, and then you can tell them what your wishes are, and they can help you navigate that to make sure that it's going to be either through a trust or through proper asset titling, or however you can get those assets to the people that you intend them to go to. So talking to an attorney, as opposed to even, like you said, the legal Zoom, or even some work plans have just a generic form that you can pre-populate that might not translate across all states.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely invaluable.
What about married couples? Is it necessary to have a will in place if you're married?
Absolutely.
I mean, I've had this conversation with people where they think, well, it's just going to go to my spouse anyway. What's it matter?
Mm. Well, what if you both die at the same time? Mm-hmm. Then where's that going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or what if you die and they're in a coma and they can't manage the money or need somebody to help with that too? So, you know, every state is different. And in Ohio, we can avoid probate pretty much with proper asset titling and naming beneficiaries to things like bank accounts and retirement plans and whatnot. But all states aren't the same. Right. So, but in Ohio, the will for us, if we do everything right, is just kind of like a safety net. It might never get looked at. But what if you forgot about a bank account that you had 10 years ago over at such and such a place, and now it's grown into $10,000, and that wasn't left with a proper beneficiary? So now everything has to go back into probate to try to get that to where it goes. That's what that will is for. That's the safety net. Just in case you forget something, that'll catch it up
mm-hmm.
and make sure that it gets where you want it to go. So wills are also wonderful tools for naming guardians for young children. Somebody who's going to handle all of your estate if you want. So, you know, it's not just that you're married, the I love you simple will, everything I have goes to you, everything you have goes to me, and that's just it. There's a lot of other factors to consider, especially if that married couple does have kids.
So as far as income disparity, women often earn less over their careers due to wage gaps and career breaks impacting their retirement savings. What's your best practice when you have somebody come through the door to get started saving retirement for retirement?
So that is true with the income disparity. But my best practice, I think, is really just really monitoring what comes in and what goes out. Every adult needs to know what their cash flow picture looks like. And most of us have to learn how to live beneath our means. So even if we're making perhaps less money than our male counterparts might be making, unless there's a way that we can leapfrog and change that situation, we have to do with the income that we're dealt with. What we have is what we have is what we have. Again, unless you want to go out and work two jobs or three jobs. So what you do then is figure out how to live on less than what you have. And that has to become a lifestyle. So paying yourself first and saving is absolutely important. That's the first
paying
thing that
yourself,
you have to do.
I'm sorry
do.
To interrupt. Paying yourself mm-hmm. first, does that go to retirement? Does that go to shoes? I mean, there's a conversation that you hear yep. different points of view. Paying yourself, okay, pay yourself 10%. This is mm-hmm. this is a standard mantra that I've seen for years. Does that include savings or is that outside, you know, fun money?
So I think that's a very excellent question. And everybody manages their finances separately, right, or differently, I should say. But for me personally, my savings, my retirement savings comes out of the paycheck. That just goes, that's money I never see.
Out of sight, right? Out of mind.
But so then I get the paycheck, and then there's savings from that paycheck too, right, in order to live beneath the means. There's I want to take a vacation. I want to do Christmas. I know I have real estate taxes, those types of things. It's not technically savings, but it's setting aside for those larger expenses that come up, where so often we see clients come in and, well, I couldn't save this month because real estate taxes were due. Well, that's not a surprise, right? That's not necessarily an unexpected expense. We know real estate taxes are going to be due. So if you're watching your cash flow, watching what's coming in, watch what's going out, you can manage that. You can plan for it, whether it's to save monthly or however it is that you come to that time where you have to pay the bill and you actually have the cash for it. So that goes to also having that emergency cash reserve and that extra bucket of money that's there for those unexpected expenses that are truly unexpected expenses that come up, like, you know, somebody hit a golf ball through your window, you need to replace that, or you need a new roof or a new, you know, car, I guess. And I say that because those aren't really unexpected expenses either. Those are things we know we're going to need at some point. But if you're able to live beneath your means and you're able to stash and have an emergency savings and put money in retirement and all that, when life does happen and gives you a setback and you do have a large unexpected expense, you'll be able to handle it as opposed to having to go into debt to pay for it. So it really doesn't matter what kind of income level you have. You just have to learn to live on less.
I think we also have a little bit of a different scenario as females with the healthcare situation. We typically face higher healthcare costs because of the nature of existence and health issues that we might have to deal with. Is there a better way to plan for that? I mean, other than just checking and rechecking your healthcare policy?
I can't really think of a way to save for specifically for healthcare other than just cash is king and having as much money. You know, you have an insurance plan. You know what your maximum out-of-pocket costs are going to be. Try to always have those set aside so that when you do have those visits and you have to go, maybe you have to go back for another mammogram, or maybe they found something and now you need a surgery or whatever, you know that's not going to set you back because you've already had your maximum, you know, out-of-pocket medical expenses set mm-hmm. aside.
And we've done some great podcasts on healthcare that you can pop in and listen to that will be a supplement to the conversation. So rise of women-focused financial products. I'm really interested in this. What are some examples of financial products that are specifically designed with our unique financial journeys in mind, if anything comes to mind? I guess like flexible retirement account might come to my mind. I know that we tend to be lower risk-oriented, I think, overall than the opposite gender. We're more conservative, I would assume. Is that true?
I think that's generally true. Mm-hmm. I do see the women being much more conservative than the men.
Is it hard to help somebody understand how to come out of that mindset. So, so we talk a lot about behavioral finance in our day-to-day, but that is, how do you get somebody out of that headspace?
Well, I think you have to impress upon them that they could live very, very long time. And, you know, if we retire at 65, people are living easily 30 years in retirement. So with the inflationary environment that we have right now, I mean, you can see that you have to outpace inflation. You can't just keep your money in the bank. Even right now at, you know, some of the places where you're getting 4%, inflation's just about that high right now, right? So we want to stay ahead of inflation. So I think you do have to take on a little bit of risk in order to get the return that's going to hopefully make that portfolio last your 30 years in retirement. You can't just stick it all in your mattress and hope that, you know, hope for the best. I guess there's risk everywhere, but definitely need to think about the potential growth and outpacing inflation. And
Don't be emotional about it.
Well, that,
I mean,
too.
That's a hard part for us, I think, too.
Well, it's a hard part for everybody. I think it's a lot easier to make a dollar than it is to lose a dollar, mm-hmm. and losing a dollar can be very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question, especially if, for, as women, which we're talking about, we don't make as much, so it's going to take us longer to regain that.
Mm-hmm. Are there policies or features in retirement plans that support women? I can't think of any right way to ask that question, especially those who might experience a career break for caregiving.
Some retirement plans might allow, you know, hardship withdrawal, or some way for you to get your money out of the account if there is something going on where you're, you know, having to stop, do a work stoppage to care for an aging parent or anything like that. Other than that, I can't really think of any specific benefits that would help a female over a male, or that would help in a financial situation. I mean, you can take 401k loans. There's a way to get your money out if you need it. Wouldn't be my first recommended place to tap, but...
What's your top five suggestions for a female client that's coming through the door that is just getting started and getting ready to plan for retirement but has maybe a substantial amount of debt, obviously has some wants down the road, some dreams, some financial goals? Give me three or four or five things that you might say to that person to do this the right way.
So my first thing is just that, know what's coming in and know what's going out. You'd be surprised how many people can't tell you what it costs them to live a year. And I can tell you exactly what it costs me to live the way that I want to live. So that's stepping stone number one. You need to know what's coming in.
And people think their salary is what when you ask them that question, they think you're asking how much money they bring home.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what you're asking.
That's not what I'm asking. I'm absolutely, what is the bare minimum that you need to keep the lights on, food in the refrigerator, you know, clothes on your back, those things. Not the fun, necessarily the vacations, but that counts in there too, right? So.
Because only then can you peel back layers, right? Once you satisfy those, then you can assess how much extra you have to do those things.
Right, or where the bleeding is, mm-hmm. or where, you know, how can I save more money if I don't have any left over at the end of the month? Well, why don't you have any left over? Mm-hmm. Where's it going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the big holes? Are we going to Starbucks every day? Are we eating out every day? Could we go to the grocery store and make pasta cheaper than we can go out and buy the pasta, mm-hmm. right? So that's the first step, I think. You have to know what's coming in and what's going out,
mm-hmm.
so that we can then focus on the other areas. So cash flow, I already mentioned the estate plan. That has to be in place. That's something, as soon as you turn 18, you need to get those documents in place. So that is definitely one. And then once we know that's tied up, we know where your cash flow is, then we got to talk about saving and filling up those other buckets for retirement. Are you maxing out your 401k? If so, is it pre-tax or after-tax or a combination of the two? Because when we get to retirement, we'd like to have a diverse bucket of money to pull from. So I don't know if I can just give you a magic wand for everybody, but it is definitely knowing what's coming in, what's going out, having a plan for what you can save, saving as much as you can. You have to really save more than you think that you need to save.
You just kind of read my mind. I was going to ask you, is it true that living in retirement is more expensive or more costly than when you're working?
I have seen that. At least in the first 10 years of retirement, depending on the retirement age. So let's say you retire at 65. Over the first 10 years, we're traveling, we've got grandbabies, we're taking them on Disney cruises, we're, you know, helping the kids update their houses, we're just living our lives like we did, but maybe some more trips and some more things while we're younger. So I definitely don't see people spending less in retirement than they were when they were working. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's the same. Mm-hmm. So if it's costing you $120,000 a year to live right now while you're making an income, you can pretty much guarantee it's going to cost you the same when you retire, maybe more, because you're going to do more traveling or whatever it is that you like to do when you're retired and have the time to do it.
And it sounds like researching and really understanding annually, like looking at this every year, as opposed to just kind of burying your head in the sand. Looking at your insurance, is it the best insurance? Are you overpaying? Are you paying enough? Paying the right, getting the right, what am I thinking of?
Coverage for the premium.
I've had no caffeine today. You'll have to bear with me. That's kind of, financial knowledge, educating yourself.
Yeah, so that's the other piece that we didn't even mention, right? So cash flow, get your estate plan, look at your retirement savings, and then protect what you have. Mm-hmm. So protecting what you have is the insurance piece, mm-hmm. right? So protecting your income, if we lose our ability to produce an income, that could be a problem, right? So we have to have proper insurance in place, disability insurance, if something were to happen to us where we can no longer make an income. Life insurance, obviously, if you drop dead, that can get in the way of your plans, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have people that you need to care for and your death would cause them a hardship, then you need to consider those types of insurances, mm-hmm. right? Having mm-hmm. that into place. Property and casualty insurance, I mean, look at what just happened in North Carolina. Some of those people didn't have any insurance, and now they've lost everything they own with no chance of getting any of that back. That's a lifetime of accumulation that was just wiped out. So, you know, having good insurance is important. I have some clients who will laugh at me and say, Kim, I know you love insurance. And I don't. I truly don't love insurance. But what I do love is when something happens and you have an accident and you can go make a claim and insurance pays mm-hmm. and you're not, you know, stuck with that massive cost out of pocket.
That's hard, though, because you don't know what you don't know. So when you're meeting with your insurance agent, you don't know what to ask. You're relying on a good faith relationship for that person to tell you what you need.
That is true. And even when you do know what you know, there's things you don't know. So I've been doing this 20 years. My mother was just in a car accident. And in talking to the agent, I find out you can get replacement costs, like actual cash value replacement costs for the vehicle. So now I'm driving a brand new car. It's not even a month old. If somebody hits that car, I'm going to get depreciated value for the car. I'm not going to get the cost of what it is going to actually cost me to replace that car. But there is a coverage that you can put on your insurance to ensure that you do. Mm-hmm. So now I have that. But I didn't know that until my mom got in an accident. And then they made the comment. I said, well, I learned something today. After 20 years, I didn't know that was even an option, that you could have that coverage.
And I just learned about an accident policy that I probably should have had 12 years ago before I fell down the stairs and broke myself. It would have helped me a lot with all the physical therapy I had to go through. But who knew?
Who knew, right?
Now I'm actually getting ready to put that in place. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm active. I work out. You know, you have to identify what kind of lifestyle you live and recognize you have to plan for what can happen. But asking those questions is hard because you don't know what to possibly think could happen to ask the agent. You assume the agent's going to give you a line item list of questions that will help probe those conversations, and sometimes that just doesn't happen.
Well, that's true. And some good agents will do that, too.
Yeah.
But that's also true in even going to see a financial planner. You know, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know what questions to ask. So you have to do a little bit self-education, I think, or finding out what it is that you're looking for before you go to someone so you do know if they're a fit, you know what questions to ask. You know if you're getting the right answers or answers that fit what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. So knowledge is power.
It
is. Honestly. Is there anything else that we can add that we can top this conversation off that we haven't discussed?
As it relates to women specifically, I just feel like we just all need to be aware that we're probably going to spend some time on our own, whether we're married or whether we're not. And that's something that I feel most women just are never prepared for. And then they lose the spouse and they find that they're trying to do two jobs, so to speak, right, of the married couple. So really taking control of finances, even if you're in a married partnership or in a couple, know what's going on mm-hmm. so that when something happens to that significant other of yours, you're not left there holding the bag trying to figure out what we got, what's going on, who to talk to, how to manage all of this. I would definitely say play an active part. And obviously, if you're single and you don't have that significant other, then you're kind of forced to play that active part. But make sure all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted in terms of, you know, your accounts. And like I say, that's where we say to see the attorney and talk about proper asset titling and make sure that you have beneficiaries named to everything so that that money that you are working extra hard for can get to the right person, get mm-hmm. to where you want it to go, not to where a judge decides it's going to go.
Fantastic. Well, it's been nice talking to you. Thanks for coming down to record finally. This has been fun.
My pleasure.
It's always nice to see you. That's it for today. We appreciate you for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.